This is the Vancouver Weather State Podcast.
And welcome back to Vancouver Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Scalina.
And I'm your other host, Matt Scalina.
And Matt, we should say host, but also realtors at Oakwind Realty in downtown Vancouver. So excited to have no guests this week. Not that I don't love our guests, but it's just the two of us talking about tips for sellers, hot tips for sellers this fall. And what a time to be putting this episode out, because we're kind of in the dog days of summer here. I'm currently, like I said, dressed for the beach.
You have palm trees on your shirt.
Yeah. In my mind and on my shirt. And here's the thing, Matt, we probably only have a few weeks before this fall market starts cooking. And if you're thinking about selling, this show is for you.
Yeah, absolutely, Adam. The thing here basically is, you know, we were talking about questions we're discussing with clients kind of on an ongoing basis. And the same things come up over and over again. And it's very specific to this market, right? You know, a pretty slow market in which to list a property. And so we basically condensed all those questions we're discussing with people on a day-to-day basis and put it into a show. So hopefully people will find it useful.
Yeah, you know what? And I think other agents, you know, it's worth listening to, because there's quite a few takeaways. So hopefully the industry listens as well. And I'm sure there'll be some people nodding their heads or potentially shaking their heads, like, what are these guys talking about? So let's see how it goes.
Absolutely. But before we get to that, Adam, you have the realist headlines.
I do, Matt. The realist headlines, of course, are brought to you by Howard Chais, the realist, putting the real in real estate news. This, of course, is his Substack over at howardchai.substack.com. Some great headlines this week. We've got the city of Vancouver has signed a memorandum of understanding with the Show Vancouver Bid Corporation as their preferred proponent in a bid for an MLB team. So this is, I guess, a baseball team that the city of Vancouver's talking about, or at least trying to learn more about. This group is led by Zach Ross, president of Vancouver-based developer Cape Corp. Various other business leaders have also signed the letter of support. So this is pretty exciting, I think, news. And this also big week for memorandums of understanding, because there was also one signed by the city of Vancouver with the Vancouver Canucks, owned by the Aquilinis, of course, to explore a new hockey development facility, which is like a stone's throw away from your house over at the Britannia Community Service Center site. So it's adjacent to the Britannia ice rink there.
Yeah, I walk my dog by Britannia Community Center. This is very exciting. Did I tell you that I was at Nightingale a couple weeks ago and sat beside Connor Bedard? Did I tell you that? I only bring it up because I've never been that excited to sit beside like a 19 or 20 year old guy. Man, those guys look young, and they're not that big, actually. That was the other thing. It was him and Celebrini. I was sitting beside Bedard and Celebrini, and it just makes me think, if the Canucks are training day in and day out on Commercial Drive, that would be a huge thing for my life. I don't know how else to say it.
I'll think of a way to say it. When I think of the movie The Fan starring Robert De Niro, I think of you. And I think the Canucks should really think about where they're putting their practice facility in proximity to your house.
Might be dangerous.
Yeah. A little restraining order coming your way. The Vancouver City Council has one final council meeting before the summer break and municipal election, where they voted 10-1 to reject the proposed villages plan. I don't need to say much more than go back to last week, where we had a riveting conversation, or two weeks ago, when we had a conversation with, of course, Phil Webb on the show about the Villages plan. And we've had lots of positive feedback about that show. I feel like it kind of went all over the place a little bit, but in maybe the best way possible.
As one person on YouTube said, this was entertaining. And then he used it as a This was funny. He used it as an opportunity to talk about the neighborhood Renfrew, which is where Phil lives. And he said, my dish rag, he also lived in Renfrew. Did he say dish rag or dishwater neighborhood? He described Renfrew. Oh my God. I'm a big fan of Renfrew, honestly. But, I like Renfrew. I guess two guys, you used to live in Renfrew. Anyway, yeah, lots of positive feedback. And I think Phil knew at the time that the villages were, that plan was not going to be passed. And it wasn't, which is unfortunate, I think, for the city. But so it goes.
And last but not least, Matt, for the headlines, Toronto-based Woodburn Capital has initiated receivership proceedings against the 24-acre Portwood Master Plan project in Port Moody that they've been co-developing with Edgar Development. So it sounds like the receivership application is set to be heard on August 8th, but Edgar told the realists that they expect to reach a resolution soon. So we'll see how that goes. Stay tuned for some more headlines. And Matt, we also have the trivia section.
Well, it's not the trivia section. It's the section that remains nameless, Adam. And the trivia question this week, it might be old news because we're doing this a week in advance, but the July sales data just came out, the stats as they're called. So here's the question for you, and it's multiple choice, and this one should be, well, we'll see. So Adam, as we talk about in the show, June sales jumped about 10% to kick off the summer. Everybody was very excited about that. In July, Metro Vancouver home sales did what, and which property type led the move? So A, kept climbing, led by detached homes. B, basically stayed flat. C, fell almost 10%, led by a nearly 18% drop in condo sales. Or D, fell, led by detached homes. But before we get to your answer, Adam, of that fairly, maybe not fairly easy question that I came up with this week, I did want to highlight one of our listings. This one is in Hastings Sunrise, or the East Village, as some call it, as a business community, I guess, along Hastings calls it. 219-2910 East Pender. This is Renfrew Court. Really interesting property. Over 1,200 square feet, renovated, 2-bed, 1.5-bath with a rooftop deck. You can see Capitol Hill, Brentwood, Metrotown. The views from the rooftop, and actually the bedrooms upstairs are unbelievable. The one thing about this property that is so unique is it really feels like a townhome. So you walk in, there's just so much space. You have an upstairs and the rooftop deck, but it's a condo. And here's the best part, Adam, offered at $719,900 for over 1,200 square feet.
Wow.
You can't beat that value. It's at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com and ScalinaRealEstate.com. Check it out while you're there. Check out our resources like the sold plan that can help you get your property ready for market. Just click sell with us. But let's get back to this quiz question.
Yeah, Matt. So I'm going to go with, I haven't really done a deep dive on the stats yet.
As your shirt suggests, you have not done a deep dive on the stats yet.
I just got back from Tofino. Here it is. Let's, I'm going to go with C.
C. So July 2026, Metro Vancouver home sales fell almost 10%, led by a nearly 18% drop in condo sales. That's your final answer?
Final answer.
That is correct, Adam. That is the unfortunate takeaway from the July stats. One step forward, one step back, treading sounds water like, in this market.
Sounds like your diet plan. All right, let's get on with today's show. We'll see you on the other side.
Absolutely.
Zantera has done it again. Recently named Multifamily Home Builder of the Year by the Home Builders Association of Vancouver and the Canadian Home Builders Association of BC. Zantera continues to move forward on new projects. And their latest, Butte, a new condo community in West Clayton, is now selling. With construction already underway, buyers can purchase with confidence, knowing that the project is moving forward.
Butte offers one, two- and three-bedroom condos located just 3 blocks to the future SkyTrain, Adam. These condos come with tons of inclusions like gas ranges, air conditioning, and designer-selected finishes. Residents will have access to the rooftop patio, fitness center, on-site daycare, co-working space, games room, and tons of outdoor space with 3 playgrounds. Estimated completion is summer 2028.
The best deals are happening now. Visit Zentera's home store in South Surrey to get all the details or check out the floor plans at buttecondos.ca. That's buttecondos.ca.
Hi, I'm Michael Yu.
And I'm Morgan Brown. And we're the founders of Oakland Realty. We have 9 offices across British Columbia.
Serving all major markets of BC. If you're an agent out there, just like Adam and Matt, who happen to be licensed at Oakland, please reach out to us at oakwin.com/join and type into that message box, the rep, and you'll receive a free gift and a promotion when you meet one of our leaders.
Thanks so much. And we're looking forward to meeting with you.
See you soon.
Okay, Matt. So an episode we've been thinking a lot about lately. Today, we are talking about frequently asked questions from sellers in this current market. And first, we got to say it's not the easiest market to sell in, and some worse than others. But today, we're going to deal with the top questions that we're getting in this market. And Matt, before any good conversation, tell us what you're going to tell us, and then tell us what you told us.
Well, what we're going to talk about today, Adam, I think that's a Mark Twain quote. Nice reference. We're going to talk about questions that come up when you're thinking of listing, you know, before you actually decide when you list and then when offers come in. And this is, you know, we're in, as you can tell by your shirt, if you see the video, we're deep summer. The July stats just came out. I'd say 1 step forward, 2 steps back in terms of where the market is. We had a strong June, weaker July. This is kind of a very specific conversation for the market in the fall of 2026. So hopefully it's useful. Yeah, let's get into it.
Okay. I'm doing my best Walter Goggins impression here. All right. Let's especially my hairline. Okay. So number one, Matt. We're talking specifically now about if you're thinking of listing, is now the time to list?
Yeah, this is an interesting question. And one I think about, you know, as an owner of real estate, I think I wouldn't list right now, in all honesty. I think I'm waiting for a better day with the one caveat. I mean, well, 2 caveats. One is we've been grinding downwards in price since about mid-2022, okay? My general sense, although I've had this sense before, is we're kind of treading near the bottom, and I'm a glass half full guy, and I'm hoping the future is better. With that said, I would have said the same thing last year, and we're off, you know, 7% in, say, condos since last year. So waiting for a better day, I think the caveat here is, what is your time horizon? If you have kind of 5+ years, wait for the better day. If you're thinking in the next year or two, I might pull the trigger right now. What are your thoughts?
Well, yeah. And I think, I think it comes down to end user versus investor, right? Because I mean, sometimes if we're talking to investors right now, is your property rented? Does it rent quite easily? Are you covering your costs? Well, then I would really have a hard time selling in a market like this. I'd probably be thinking, okay, well, I'll wait for a more buoyant market or a market where there's more transactions happening and better sales ratios for sellers, right? But if I was, an end user, as an end user, you're kind of always thinking about, you know, the things that drive your family. So there's always death, divorce, relocation, family expansion. And that's a big one. A lot of people that are trying to go from, say, a townhouse into the detached market or from a condo into a townhouse or a half duplex. And it is a fantastic market for people trying to move up through the market, right? So then in that case, I'd be saying, okay, I think it's time to sell right now. This is a great opportunity. And everything that I'm shopping for is on sale, even though my place is likely on sale as well, right?
Yeah, you know, and the last thing around this, and it's worth saying, the question to ask yourself is what and where are you selling as well? So not only who you are in this market and what the goals are, but what you're selling, if it's an investment condo, that market is significantly worse than, say, a single family home for under $2.5 million right now, which is actually a pretty hot commodity. Let's talk a little bit about market knowledge and market data and kind of the subtleties of the market right now, because I think it's worth unpacking. A lot of the people I'm talking to lately, and specifically past clients who are not obsessed with real estate and don't listen to podcasts every week, are calling me and they have kind of very skewed ideas of where the market is right now. And I'll just say this. Generally, I am having conversations this year where I think I'm delivering bad news. And the seller goes, oh my God, I thought it was a lot worse than that, which is very different from last year or the year before. But let's take the layers of the onion, unpeel it for us, Adam.
Well, you know, here's the thing. You know, we've talked a lot on this show how looking at kind of macro markets is not a very useful thing to do in real estate. Like, you know, Canadian real estate, it's kind of meaningless to talk about Canadian real estate generally, right? You got to really look at the skins of the onion. And in Vancouver, that means diving deep, going extremely local, and looking at not only the sub area that you're in, but also the price band that you're in, as well as the product type. And when we say product type, meaning condo, townhouse, single family detached home, half duplex, these are all things that really can inform your decision. And you know what the reality is that, you know, when you read the headline and it says something to the effect of Vancouver's average home price down X, there are certain markets that are really dragging, you know, certain submarkets and product types. You know, think about like condos, perhaps in like the Tri-Cities or in the Valley, that might really be have grinded to a halt. They're really kind of lagging prices down. However, the flip side of that is if you have a townhouse under 1.6 in Kitsilano right now, there's a good chance you'll get multiple offers on it if you price it correctly.
100%.
Because there's a ton of demand and there's not a lot of inventory. Or like you were saying, you know, certain pockets in East Vancouver for entry-level detached, you're going to get a ton of interest. So really knowing where you are, what you have can go a long way. And it's not only is it maybe not as bad as what you thought, but it's actually maybe a much brighter picture than what you imagined. So, you know, having that conversation.
You know, somebody said to me too, I mean, it goes without saying, a turnkey is definitely what you want to be selling today. And what somebody said the other day to me, and I was like, that's exactly right. Nobody wants to pay for a renovation right now, but nobody wants a project either. So, you know, I think how to navigate that comment is the challenge, but really you want to present a clean property that you don't need to redo the kitchen right now, but you definitely don't want a property that has multiple projects that a buyer's taking on.
Yeah. Well, of course, you know, right now, like I'll give credit here because a friend of the show, Rob Zwick, just did he broke down the costs of building new construction, high-end homes on the west
side. I saw that. Yeah, that was great.
And the idea was basically that, like, just to demonstrate how much under replacement costs these homes are right now, they're on sale and you don't have to go through the labor of building and sourcing materials and soft costs, hard costs, everything else, right? Which I think was a really great point. But to your point, nobody really wants to do a renovation right now. It's still very expensive to renovate. It takes time. And it is, it's the turnkey. It's the, right now it seems to be turnkey options for end users. And I find there's a lot of people that are moving into the market, either first-time home buyers or young couples or young families that are looking to expand their space and they want something that's completely dialed.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Buy first or sell first, Adam? This is a question that comes up often because the movers in this market generally are people moving through the market, people that own real estate and are looking to upsize, downsize. It's a question, it's a perennial question, but I'd say it's market specific. Buy first or sell first?
Yeah, this is a really tricky one. And so I get the perspective of a lot of people. If you're in a home that you like and you've enjoyed living there and you're comfortable, but you're seeing an opportunity to move up in this market, there's probably a feeling that we don't want to give this up unless there's something really exceptional on the other side. So it's scary to think that you might sell in a week or two, and then you have to find something, and you might only have 70 to 90 days to do that, right? And that includes closing on it. So it is a terrifying, I think of myself right now, if I wanted to move through the market right now, I wouldn't want to give up my house unless there was something spectacular on the other side. So we're both aware of that, I think, when we're having conversations with people.
Yeah. And Adam, just to somebody out there is thinking, yeah, but there's so much inventory. If you were ever to sell first in order to buy, now is the time. But I think that's misleading as well. Because if you're looking for a nice home in Mount Pleasant, I mean, good luck. Like, it's extremely difficult.
It depends where you're going. And this comes back to, I think actually, like the overriding theme of this conversation is you really need to think local and have somebody who can kind of guide you through these various markets, because you're right. You know, right now you could go buy a one bed condo in Greater Vancouver and you'd get probably the nicest one bedroom you could have bought in the last 10 years, you know, at a really good price. You'd have, you know, a bunch to choose from, and you could do it in probably under a week if you wanted to.
100%.
If you're looking for, again, like you said, like an exceptional townhouse or a entry-level detached house in, say, like a Kits or a Mount Pleasant West or a Grandview, or a market that's really buoyant, it's not going to be easy. It's not going to be easy. So, and I think that's one of the challenges is a lot of people right now in this market, they want to make the move, but they're looking for a unicorn, and it's daunting, this idea of selling. However, if you want to wait and buy first and sell second, there's a couple things you should do. One is make sure you talk to a mortgage broker to make sure that it's possible. And when you have that conversation with a mortgage broker, you're looking for option for plan A, plan B, and then what we'll call like the parachute plan. If everything goes south, here's what we're going to do. Because if you get yourself into a contract and you don't sell your place, you still have to close on this property, or you're in breach of contract, and it could be a very bad situation to be in. So make sure that you have a conversation with a mortgage broker and you have a way that you can actually bridge the purchase and the sale in the worst case scenario. And I think the other thing I would say is if you're thinking about buying first and selling second, get the marketing materials done up front. So that means that we get your home ready, we get everything looking completely fantastic, market ready, decluttered, looking great. We get the photos, videos, floor plans, everything done up front, so that in the event that you do find a place, we can push play on your listing immediately. And I think that will save a couple weeks, right?
Yeah, absolutely. But the one thing, the other point, and you and I had a conversation about this around the specific property about a week or two ago, you know, because I feel like there's, you know, in any market, there's surprises, right? Like it's like, okay, oh, that listing did better than I thought it would, or what's holding this back? Like, why am I not getting the calls? It's as much an art as it is a science. But the market is the market, right? That's one thing that I think in this situation, it's like everybody can look at the comparables, can look at what's on the market and make an educated guess as to the value of a property. But if you're buying first, you need a significant buffer or a significant window of what's an acceptable price if you need to sell after, right? Because it's what we're finding right now is, you know, and we're pretty good at pricing properties, but there's still a lot of unknowns out there.
Well, this market is humbling top agents everywhere. I mean, all you have to do is look at the price adjustments happening right now on your automated searches or, you know, your REW account or whatever, right? I mean, there's price drops every single day across the board, and a lot of them are dramatic, and a lot of them have been reduced for, you know, multiple times over hundreds of days. So this idea that, you know, it's a very tricky market to price things. And I ran into an agent friend of ours the other day, and he said, you know, everything I've got listed right now is selling in like a week or three to six months, you know, like it's like,
right.
And it's very hard to know what's going to go. And I'm sure this is resonating with some agents out there, because it is a tricky market. You have to be, things that you used to be able to use for CMAs are not working the way they once did. And sometimes there's no rhyme or reason why something is popular in this market. It's tough to kind of get to the bottom of it. I do want to go back though, Matt. I think just going to the, should I list first and buy second or vice versa? There is obviously a lot less risk if you sell your home first. And I think that is the big thing. And I think that's usually the best plan. So you would list your property, you would hope to sell in a relatively short period of time, and you would try to get the longest close possible with the option to move the dates up if required. But I think that that's a way better plan in this market, just because of what we're talking about. There's lots of uncertainty. It's kind of hard to hit the nail on the head when it comes to pricing in this market. And there's a chance that you might join standing stale inventory.
100%. Only other point I want to make in regards to list first or buy. Yeah, the uncertainty question. Subject to sale is something that is happening this year. I feel like it's very dependent on neighborhood. It's very dependent on property type. And it's very dependent on the kind of rhythm of the market, is my sense. It's like certain listings seem to, it's like if you've been on the market for a couple months, it's a strange feeling where you go 2 weeks where it's like, is this even listed? Like what? There's nobody coming to the open houses. And then there's like flurries of activity. And that's usually when, right, you know, you get an offer and get it sold. So it's kind of timing where people are in terms of how confident they are on selling. But subject to sale is definitely happening right now. And we've used it effectively this year, both for buyers and for sellers. So that's something to consider. The only thing this was actually our listing, not our buyer. You know, you feel bad for somebody who gets a subject to sale. They do an inspection, they get their property listed, you know, they're very excited. They're introducing themselves to the neighbors as I'm your new neighbor. And then another offer comes in, and there's always that shotgun clause where you can work with another offer. So there are pitfalls with subject to sale as well. It's not foolproof, but it is an option for sure.
Yeah. And like we said before, it's maybe not an option if you're, you know, looking for townhomes in Kits, but it's definitely probably an option if you're looking for, say, townhomes in Clayton.
Yeah.
So it just depends. Yes. It depends. It depends on the market, and it depends what you're looking for. But it's a great option. And that used to be like, you know, 10 years ago in this market, you would be, you know, you'd be laughed
at. No one knew how to
subject to sale. So
no one even knew how to do them.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like you had to talk to the old timer in the office.
Yeah, exactly. But it's nice that they're back. All right, moving on, Matt.
Yeah, Adam. So now you've decided to list. There's a couple questions that always come up, and they're mainly around pricing. How do you interpret comparables in this market? I mean, you just talked about price drops. So how do you price a property? And one thing, Adam, I'll just say here is this is the beauty of AI. I took all of my listings in the last 3 years, a lot of them were co-lists because we co-list a lot of properties, and I threw them into Claude just to see. So my listings, I'll say our listings, are selling at 99.28% of asking on average. You know, not to pump our own tires here, but we're pretty decent at pricing properties effectively. So, Adam, how do you interpret comparables in this market?
I was waiting for you to finish the commercial. So here's the thing. You're like, Matt Scalina, never too busy for your referrals.
Never too busy.
I think the biggest thing is that how you do CMAs and you know, I mean, I love talking to other agents about how they do market analyses because everyone's got different approaches to them. There's some people that are more kind of gut-based, and there's a lot of people that are kind of data-driven really deep, and it takes them a lot longer. I'm just in the process right now of doing some CMAs for a law firm, just like as just as a like a contract for the CMA. It's for the CMAs themselves, and it can be a very arduous process. And anybody that's had an appraisal done or any appraisers out there know that. Right now, what I'm doing is I'm spending a lot more time on the phone talking to agents that have active listings in the area. And what I'm trying to figure out is what kind of activity they're getting on their active listings in the area. So basically trying to figure out, okay, have you had any offers yet? What are the open houses like? How many calls a week are you getting at this price point? So I would say that instead of really focusing on the past sales that can, you know, yesterday's price is not today's price.
I think Fat Joe said that.
Was that Fat Joe? Yeah, thanks. Okay. So it's one of these things that you want, you don't want to rely on comps from 1 to 3 months ago in this market. You want to make sure, and it's even hard to rely on comps from really short periods of time right now. I mean, it's obviously a good guide, but you want to be talking to agents that have stuff listed right now. You want to have like this week's data, because as you mentioned before, the market is changing so quickly. You're getting these bursts of activities. And you'll learn a lot more from those calls than you will probably from the data.
Yeah, I feel like it's not looking at what your neighbor sold for last year, not looking at the assessed value. I feel like this is where listings strategies go to die, looking at that old information. I've been actually looking at expireds as well, terminated listings, and the active inventory. That will tell you exactly where you need to be. And I guess the only other question when it comes, so it's like, you're right. It's a lot more active market analysis, not just sitting at a computer, active
yes.
by, I mean, boots on the ground, speaking to people, than it is in other markets. The other thing that I feel like is a strategy that no longer works, and maybe this is obvious, is anchoring high, testing the market, leaving room for negotiating. Yeah. I mean...
Well, there's two extremes. Going incredibly low isn't always working in this market. So like the idea of like testing for multiples, like people are reluctant to compete. And even if they are willing to compete, the margins that they're willing to go above asking seem to be tighter than they have been in previous years. So you're seeing a lot of people fall flat with that approach. You know, sometimes it's successful, sometimes it's not. And like you say, anchoring high, like testing the market, just talk about being humbled. That's probably one of the, that's a very challenging approach right now.
Well, and it's worth saying, and we've talked about it 100 times on the show about current sales ratios, you know, effectively 1 out of every 10 homes is selling. And this is, you know, I think it's skewed in certain markets or it's misleading in certain markets, I should say, like single family homes in East Van, where the sales ratios are 12, 13%. But a lot of those homes that are sitting are kind of teardowns. So, you know, finding a good home is challenging or a livable home. But as a general proposition, you know, put yourself in a buyer's shoes. If you're going on a tour right now, you might be going to see 6 or 8 properties that are fairly comparable, probably more than one of them could work. And how would you feel about the one that's anchored really high? Like, why bother? And, yeah. You know, what I'm finding is often buyers are saying, well, why bother even looking at that property is the first. And then if they decide to look at it, it's like, okay, well, now I've seen an overpriced listing and these guys are clearly... you know, not in a realm of where they need to be and let's move on. So, you know, I think that's an effective way to think about it from a buyer's perspective. There's a lot of choice. There's a lot of options. And, you know, in my mind as a seller, there's 3 sort of hurdles. One is getting people through the door. You have to be priced effectively to get people to show up to open houses, to get people to make private showings. The second hurdle is getting one or two or three of those groups to want to write an offer on the property, which again comes down, you know, to provide, to showing good value in this market. And you don't have to. I feel like the last thing I'll say is the effective strategy right now is a lower asking price without a lot of room. And you don't have to accept a low offer. You know, people are making lowball offers all the time right now. You're under no obligation, right? So pricing sharp and leaving little negotiation room is a strategy that's working, is a lot more effective in this market, in my experience, for sure.
One other thing, and this is going back to deep dives and getting involved in the details or really analyzing before you list. But, you know, you might, looking at the price bands and the activity in the price bands is really useful for pricing right now as well. And if you look, you know, typically, so there's a couple things to consider. One is when people start their search and they go, people often talk and think in round numbers, right? So when they talk to the mortgage broker, very seldom is it like, oh, you are approved for 925,000. It's like, no, your budget is 900,000, right? So people often set their parameters based on what they've heard from their mortgage broker. So you'll see people that will set up an automated search for $900,000 or $1 million or 1.2 or whatever it is, $2 million, whatever it is. And they'll typically see listings up to that price point. So if you're thinking of testing a little bit higher at like say $915 versus $899, for 15 grand, you may really want to consider what kind of activity is happening in the $100,000 intervals. Because here's an example, like between $800,000 and $900,000 on the west side for say condos, there might be 30% sales ratio for that price band. And then once you get to 900 to a million, it might fall off a cliff and be like 12% sales ratios. So you want to make sure that you're pricing in the most competitive markets where there are the most buyers, and making sure that you have the best first couple of weeks on the market. Because as we talked about before, you know, and our colleague said, a lot of people are selling in the first 2 weeks or not at all.
So this is a great segue, Adam, and I feel like we've kind of hammered home pricing, but something that came up last weekend to me, and I thought this is everybody probably has a different take on this. Is the first offer the best offer? You know, you're talking about, you know, you're either selling in the first week or two, or it might take 6 months. That suggests, you know, really, really thinking long and hard about that first offer. But just as a general rule in this market, take the first offer. Is that the best offer?
From our experience,
it's yes or no, Adam. Yes or no?
I would say no. I would say consider. My advice right now is take each offer very seriously, and everybody deserves a counter. I think.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like try and keep the conversation. You know what I've seen in this market a lot is people, you can often tell who gets a little emotional about a property, but somebody might anchor their first offer like something like $80,000 below asking or something like that. And you counter them fairly close to full price. And then they come up like 30 grand or something immediately, right? So It's like they're anchoring low, but there's signs that they actually really want the property and they want to make something work. So we've been having a lot of success.
You just on that point, Adam, not to cut you off. My general sense is that's the realtors. The realtors are essentially getting in the way of a transaction. Let's see how motivated they are. Exactly. So it's like you always want to counter. Because I feel like that first offer in this market is almost always a test. Like, let's see how they respond.
Yeah.
And it's almost always the realtor.
Well, and I think honestly, the one of the biggest value adds of having an agent in your corner start commercial is that they can walk you through and guide you through without the emotion, right? And I mean, it kind of sucks being a seller, especially if you love your property and you get something that's $100,000 below asking and you already thought you were priced well, all things considered, right? But, you know, it's a process and trust the process. And there's signs still in that as agents, we pick up on through other agents And I would say take every offer seriously. But this idea, the flip side of that is don't let fear drive your decisions in this market, because we've seen this kind of across the board. And there's a lot of stories going around where sellers are, you know, maybe rightfully so, but they're maybe caught up in the media or caught up in the fact that they feel like everything's falling off a cliff, or this, you know, doom and gloom kind of thinking, where they are willing to accept something that seems ridiculously low, even though there's been signs that there's room in the offer. So I'm trying to come into negotiations with balance, you know, and relying on your agent to advise and coach you through the process, I think is key in this market.
Yeah, two things I would just say in this regard about accepting the first offer. I think that idea of being bullied or operating from a place of fear is a good one. My general sense is there's a lot of crappy buyers out there right now, like people you don't want to work with, people that it's not a good experience. It's like you feel like you're being bent over the barrel, and then it's like asking for more and more and more, kind of in this relentless way. And there's been a couple times this year where we've been working for sellers where you're working on an offer and thinking, this isn't like, I had a seller say to me, this just doesn't feel good. I don't feel right about this.
Yeah.
And you know what? We sold that property for $70,000 more than that offer that we decided not to work with about 3 weeks
That's
later.
That's happened a few times.
It's happened a few times. And you're like, and then the people that actually turn up in the end, because you know you're offering good value, you're like, these are good people. I know these are just, you know, acting in good faith, and they're looking for a home. They love the home. They see the value. And there's people out there that are not those types of buyers. So you have to, I would say, you know, it's not any offer is not the one to work with. And then it's also about context, right? We had multiple offers on one of our listings in East Van, in Hastings Sunrise last weekend. And, you know, it's like the first offer was okay, and we ended up getting multiples on it. The first offer was okay, but we had a lot of showings. It was like, okay, we're getting good activity on this. And that offer was okay, but it wasn't great. And so patience was a virtue there, but it was obviously the context of how the market was perceiving the listing, I think was really important, or that context that you mentioned earlier. So I feel like just as a final thought, sometimes, is it part of the real estate industries? Are they the ones saying the first offer is the best offer? Like, I often wonder, because it's like, sometimes it takes,
it's
taken a couple months. Yeah, it's a lot more work, but you get a much better result.
And here's the thing. And sometimes the first offer is the best offer. But in reality, I think what we're kind of circling around, and I think a lot of agents will agree with this, but there is a feeling that you get as an agent that where you're like, these are the right buyers for this property. And if everything, you know, you kind of got to trust your gut. And I mean, if you and the seller are saying like, look, these are not the right buyers, and, you know, they're challenging from kind of soup to nuts and grinding, and, you know, maybe it's completely okay to wait for the next group to come along. And, you know, you might be surprised. It could go either way, obviously, and it's case by case. But we've seen in this market in particular, if we have a good strategy, we think our pricing is bang on, and we're getting decent activity, then it's the same approach that we would use in any market. If someone comes along and they're a grinder or a, you know, somebody who's being unrealistic with their expectations, there's ways to tell them to move on.
Yeah. And last but not least, in other markets, you know, you're on for 30, 60, 90 days, you know, that word stigma gets thrown around. Not the case right now. That's the only other thing I would say. Less so. Obviously, 180 days, you're like, okay, what's the story here?
What's holding them back?
And you need a story, and that's, you know, you need to craft a narrative around the property. But yeah, it's not, you know, if something's been on a month, it's not, you're not in dire straits. That's for sure.
I also feel like the only other thing I'll say, Matt, and I feel like we've said one more thing on this, but it's useful, I think, saying that if you have an offer, that is a positive sign for every listing. Because I mean, if you're sitting there at 90 days and an agent says, hey, have you had any offers? And you say no, versus, yeah, we've had offers. We just haven't, you know, it hasn't worked out for whatever reason. You know, it could be dates, it could be terms, it could be subject to sale, it could be whatever it is, right? But it indicates that people want you and that you're in a better situation than crickets or tumbleweeds. So
yeah,
moving on.
Last but not least, Adam, the other one last consideration if you're selling this fall. So you've decided to list, you've priced accordingly, you've decided to take the first, second, or third offer that comes in. Can you relax after you get an accepted offer?
So I wish I could give the agent who came up with this credit, but I'm blanking on her name. The subject removal shakedown is a popular term or phrase going around right now. So you negotiate right to the end, right? And it depends. But the reality is we're seeing across the board with a lot of accepted offers, people settle on a price. And after the inspection, the buyer comes back to the table looking for more. And it could be a large amount for something that's pretty minor, or it could be a reasonable amount, or it could be a reasonable amount that logically makes sense, or it could just be a completely random amount that seems to have nothing to do with anything. But people are coming back to the table. So as a seller, you kind of have to prepare yourself. I mean, one strategy is to negotiate as hard as you can so you have a buffer to work with if you're in a situation where you're going through the shakedown towards the end, or just to prepare yourself that conversation might come up. So once you get an accepted offer, it's not time to go, okay, these are the hard numbers, I've sold my place. You're not there yet. So let your agent kind of coach you through, let your agent decide how to position or to help decide how to position yourself after the inspection. But this is definitely a thing that's coming up a lot.
There was a situation, and I think you told me about this. This was another guy in our office, a colleague of ours, where, you know, it's funny. I feel like from the buy side, it's like the most effective way to do this is to have a clear, logical reasons for the ask, right? This is what we're at. This is why we're asking for X, and here's why. And some people use kind of vague ideas about, you know, drain tile issues, like just as an example. But in this case that you told me about a couple months ago, they just came back and asked for 100K off, right? It was like is that not accurate? It was like they didn't bring up a reason. There was no reason.
Yes.
It's like we're just not removing subjects, which is we're at in this market.
Yeah, I was saying the exact same thing. Like no reason, no rhyme or reason, just hey, we want $100,000 off the price. So yeah, and I mean that happens, and I mean that's part of the negotiation in a market that is balanced or falling or however you want to describe the current state. But in many markets where it's a buyer's market, you have to have a strategy for dealing with post inspection demands, and they're real and they're out there and they're happening on a lot of properties.
I was gonna say, what would you say? I'd say 80 to 90% of the time, even on like little fixes, like, okay, fix the, you know, some $100, $200 fix. I feel like there's very few times where you go unscathed through the subject removal.
Hard to quantify, but it's almost more shocking when it doesn't happen.
100%.
Which is kind of like, oh, nice. And you know, it's like, it definitely feels better for everybody involved. So, yeah, Matt, but that's it. So some questions, frequently asked questions that we've been getting in this market based on whether you should sell your property. So things to consider when you're thinking of listing, deciding on what you're selling and what that means for you know, the price point that you're going to get, how to price your property, and of course, what to do when you finally get an offer.
Adam, did I mention my selling stat of 99.28% of asking?
Holy, this is really something. It, you know, usually we would frame it like ours. I haven't done the hard numbers.
No, I know. This is, I just don't want to mislead anyone.
I'm guessing I'm about 99.3. So we'll cut back. I've said it. It's reality. We'll crunch the numbers and we'll get back to you. But Matt, we'll see you on the other side.
So there you have it, folks. Our discussion about selling in the fall of 2026. Some considerations in FAQ, some might say, Adam. Yeah, that was a lot of fun. I enjoyed unpacking that. Yeah.
That was a lot of fun. I mean, I think the other thing that I thought about after we had that conversation, Matt, is just, you know, every property is unique and every property deserves its own strategy and own market analysis. So if you are thinking about selling this year, feel free to reach out. We're happy to do a custom CMA and strategy for your property so you fully understand the situation that you're in. And of course, no obligation to sell your property, but maybe worth kind of checking in and knowing where the value of your place is. We're always available for that. Matt, what else do we have before we cut for the day?
What else do we have? Well, we got the Sold Plan over at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. We also have buyer's resources. But other than that, I think we're dog days of summer, man. So let's cut out of here. You can always reach me at 778-847-2854 or Matt at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
Or you can try me at 778-866-4574 or Adam at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
Of course, we got that Kokomo line, tropical floral arrangements on your shirt. info@VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
Have a great week. Enjoy the rest of summer, everyone. Two buttons down always. Talk to you soon.
All right.
2,000 Faces for Radio. Subscribe today.